Right, put the meeting back in order. Item C under new business is interior project update. So, Ted, would you give the introduction, please?
Yes, Chair. I appreciate it. Today we have updates on the IAP project from IGU and where they're at in building their distribution system and designing it. And then also we'll have an update from MWH. So if it's okay with the chair, I'd like to invite up representatives from IGU. Steve Hagginson's here as their CEO, I believe. And then David is their design person. So,
all right.
Thank you, Ted.
Is this a PowerPoint?
Yep.
Okay.
I knew you were waiting for one.
Yeah.
Here comes Marianne.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Stephen Hagginson, and I'm on the board of directors for the Interior Gas Utility, but I'm also their the general manager pro tem. So, which is for a while, not much longer, I hope. But, so I'm acting as their general manager, but I'm also on the board. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to come down and talk about how IGU is using the money you lent us, moving the project forward. And this is maybe the unsexy half of it, but our job is to get the pipe in the ground and deliver it to the house, get the meter in there, get the service installed, so they can get the use. Okay, so this is the critical part, but it's not the coolest part. I mean, not many moving parts, but we're going for it. I don't want to steal any of Dave's thunder before I introduce him, but I want to make an observation. The hydraulic study that we've done, and he's going to talk about, is a really unique opportunity. Most utilities don't get to go out there and design the entire system and say, this is what I'm going to size it. But our concern was that if we didn't do this, we'd be putting a pipe that was too small to grow into. And then you have to go back and change it out. And so we're trying to be very forward-thinking and provide a community solution. Even in the transmission system, which today we'll talk about, we're trying to make sure we've got the correct planning in place, that with the right size and pipe in place, so we can use it for many, many, many years. Now I want to introduce Dave Kruzak. Dave Kruzak is the project manager for IGU on the project, and he's probably done the lion's share of the work getting us to this point. There's a pat in the back, actually, because he's moving many, many pieces of this project. But his goal is very laser-focused, and that's getting pipe in the ground and getting services and consumers connected. I do want to mention one other thing. And Dave works, we've contracted with MWH. And we call Dave little MWH, right? And the IEP guys are the big MWH, okay? And I don't want to have any confusion, they go over there, they're on both sides of the fence. We clearly have a firewall between the two of them, and so all interface from IGU to the big capital MWH is through our chairman, Bob Shepchek, and myself. So Dave never goes and negotiates for us. He never does, he just stays out of that. I mean, he's pretty laser-focused on getting pipe in the ground. With that, I will turn it over to Dave Kruzak, and he will walk you through your much-awaited PowerPoint.
Well, Chair Pruz, board members, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about what's going on. IGU was given this service territory by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska last December. You can see there in the middle is the city of Fairbanks, and we are around that area within basically the Fairbanks North Star rule. And that's the challenge for which we have. Our plan is to build out through a six-phase process, starting in phase one, down in the North Pole area, and didn't show up. Down in the North Pole area, where you see the gas plant, the gas plant, and work in a counterclockwise fashion until we get over to the Chena Ridge area. So it's a bit of a challenge, particularly when we've got storage and we've got to put gas that far along it. Each one of those phases represents a year and what we're planning for. So phase one, construction in 2015, phase two, construction in 2016, and on on forward, wondering, we're building in 2015, knowing that we can't get gas until third quarter 2016, but it gives us that opportunity to create that demand, and that's what we're showing. Through the gas modeling process, trying to determine how do we best feed these areas, how do we have some reliability to create a double feed. This is what a pipe system looks like. You'll see a lot of different colors up there. The orange colors are basically the distribution lines that run in neighborhoods. They're 2-inch diameter pipes. The feeder systems that come around that carry the to make sure that we don't run out of gas are represented in a variety of colors that you'll see up there, and red and purple, red being 8-inch, the purple being 4-inch, and the blue being 6-inch. What it would look like if we took away the orange pipe that's trying to get to as many folks as we can, it would look like that. So it gives a sense of what this network ultimately looks like. And again, what we try to do is have a two-way feed into each one of the phases that we're trying to serve. So should we lose feed from one direction, we can be able to serve in another area. But in order to do that, we've really had to look closely at trying to model the system so that we could get comfortable with it. For that, we hired NSTAR to help us with that. They have a very robust modeling system that most consultants wouldn't have, but gas utilities would. It is what they use to model that they plan for to go forward out in Homer, and what they utilize through that system. What it looks like if you were to look at the system without all of that the mapping in the background, this is just what this would look like if you identified it by diameter throughout their entire system. And I realize from that far back, it might be a little bit difficult to look at. It is able to use the GIS database, so we're able to look at individual parcels. We know what's a single-family residential home versus a multifamily versus a commercial, so that we can then anticipate what it might look like if we put it under pressure. This is a pressure map. This shows what the pressure would do. And again, working with NSTAR, we looked at climatologic data, trying to pick that type of that cold weather situation that we need to plan for. And then also then to look at what you would typically see for residential homes, what you typically see in multifamily or in commercial, be able to uniquely identify those within a GIS database, which then we're able to build out this system to give us some level or give us that level of confidence to be able to have that reliability. When we went into this process, when we looked at this, our intention originally was to look at just distribution gas. And by that, I mean something that's 100 PSI or less. That's what distribution gas is. Above 100 PSI is considered transmission gas. Regulatory requirements are a bit more stringent, and it's a little bit more onerous to be able to take on. That's what we tried to do. Through the modeling process, what we found was we had a bit of a challenge in that our distribution feeders got to be quite large. They got to be, we ended up with about 100 miles of 12-inch pipe throughout the entire system. And it kept us, and we basically, in building it out, once we got just slightly above 65% conversion rate, we had to take our pressure system from 60 PSI to 100 PSI. I've talked about this distribution pressure being less than 100 PSI or less for distribution. What I'm showing here is a system map that is at 60 PSI. One of the interests that we have at that is that in the center of the city of Fairbanks, where the Fairbanks Natural Gas Company operates, they operate their system at 60 PSI. We think that it makes sense for us to try to operate our system at that same level, so that should there be this opportunity to be able to share gas or to be able to support one another, in emergency events, we're able to do that. We weren't able to do that when we built it out with just a distribution only. However, the caveat is this. What we really found is we had to plan for transmission gas. We've got 28 miles of transmission gas line throughout this process. In doing so, we end up, because we had a hard time getting enough gas as we got further away from North Pole. We had to put in some regulator stations, a couple of them. One near the Steese Highway in the Johansson, which would be in this area, and one over in the Parks Highway in the Sheep Creek area. But all to those extents. By doing that, it allowed us to be able to push that gas all the way around our whole system more comfortably.
Where's your feedstock at?
Our feedstock is down here, right here in North Pole. Basically, down in the near the Golden Valley power plant.
So you're starting there and you're feeding it all the way back around the top of Fairbanks and back down to the west?
That's correct. If we went back to this, here's that storage area that we're talking about, and we're pushing this green line is actually the transmission gas line, and I've got to I'll back this up one more to here. What happens is I have a hard time getting gas enough gas here. I can't push enough gas up Moorvale Road by itself. I need to have a strong feed right here. Again, part of the modeling process really helped us in looking at that, but that is indeed what that is showing. And so we have reg stations here and here to take that pressure down then to a distribution level to be able to inject into the system so that we're able to have confidence that we can support the system. We just kept running out of gas if we went with just distribution only, even though we were putting 12-inch pipe in going to 100 psi, it really limited what we can do. By putting in transmission gas, the other component is in the future, when the pipeline gets filled, the point that has been discussed all along has been looking at the Sheep Creek Parks Highway route. Anywhere along this transmission line, we can take our feed into the system and be able to distribute that gas within it. So regardless of where it comes in, that has been one of the areas that just happens to be where our phase 5 and phase 6 meet. These are the phases that were really looked at when we looked at the whole build-out, tried to narrow it down to where the majority of the population centers were. I know Kirk had done a lot of work with looking at that in 2012, and really this stemmed from that effort.
Deva? Do you have any issues with the 10-inch steel pipeline in regard to cross-jacking? How deep do you have to borrow to bury that?
Typically, the transmission gas lines are approximately 5 foot of depth. We don't normally have an issue related to cross-jacking related to that. But that's where we typically pick a depth a little bit lower than our distribution lines, which are going to be about between 3 to 4 feet. Typically, the transmission is between 4 and 6 feet. They have a little bit lower than that, but we don't. And it's also the transmission line, of course, is steel, not HDP.
So it'll go through permafrost?
It will.
Okay.
But most of this route is already previously disturbed, so it's probably thawed out. We may get some discontinuous permafrost, but you're not going to get a big discontinuous piece of permafrost in Fairbanks anymore.
Probably have the biggest challenge we're going to have is going up Norddale Road, regardless of what type of pipe that we use. But
is there one feed? Do you have one area to feed all that, or do you have a redundant route or separate storage, or do you tie into Fairbanks FNG as a backup, or
currently
can you feed it from the west going back to the east? Where's Fairbanks' FNG storage?
FNG storage is right in the middle of there, right about here.
So
in fact, it's right there.
So, I guess initially we're looking to share with Golden Valley storage tank out there in H&H and South on the Oak Ridge Highway, H&H Lane, that little triangle piece. But if we look at levelizing, to make sure we can use all the plant capacity as best we can, like I think Westpac explained a little while ago, that tank would be anywhere along the transmission line. You could regas it, and I don't want it one big tank. I like redundancy, so you could site that anywhere along this transmission route that's available. So I don't like one thing, but to start out, one site's going to have to work. for a couple of years until we get to the fourth year when we start looking at transmission. And that tank we had on the route.
So we're not a transmission line that ultimately could tie into the gas, the bigger pipe gas line from a mutually owned distribution place or storage facility out the North Pole. Instead of putting storage at North Pole, you have a centralized storage location with a consortium concept and run a transmission line to North Pole. And then another transmission line from there, maybe up to your, see what I call your northeast corridor, where you're having pressure problems, you know, issues that have redundant route, obviously, and then you know, because of the savings with the high cost of storage, and then your transmission line that goes from Fairbanks to the North Pole can be used to tie into a, if there is a bullet line or major gas line. Where your storage becomes more obsolete.
We're trying to lay out a plan that is the least cost option, and that will serve the whole community. And so, as an engineer, I'd love to have a redundant transmission, right? So I have total redundancy.
Well, I mean, just get rid of the storage in North Pole and have a transmission line instead coming from a common distribution storage area that you share with Fairbanks Natural Gas. It's owned jointly or whatever, and then once long-term gas comes to Fairbanks, which is what this is a temporary solution, we think, you know, the trucking or however train or whatever happens, that line then ties right into the transmission line, ties right into your main pipeline coming down to the North Slope.
You can try that out back.
Okay. What I understand you suggesting is that a transmission line be built from the storage, the 5 million gallon storage tank that FNG is currently building, is that correct?
Or make it a 10 million gallon storage tank.
Because right now, the 5 million gallon tank will not have capacity to serve the IGU service territory after the time that it's built up.
If you made it bigger, you added more tanks to it, it would.
But we look at that, but the player that we have is not at the table today is at Golden Valley. And they need to have a tank in that by the turbine. Right? And so they want to take the waste energy off that turbine to make gas. So they don't have to take it waste energy gas to make it new gas again. So Golden Valley is looking to put a 2.2 million gallon tank in North Pole area anyhow. So we'll share that.
Do they need it if you have a transmission line?
Well,
I mean, there's no storage tanks for the gas turbine plants here in Anchorage. Why would you need a storage? I'm trying to learn this. Why would you need a storage tank if you had a transmission line directly feeding into the gas turbine in your distribution system?
It's a question of, is it cheaper to put in a storage tank and regas with waste heat? And it's an economic answer. And I think Golden Valley's done that. I haven't for them, but in regas locally near the turbine, as opposed to regassing someplace remote using LNG to regas.
We've already got a regas at FNG.
Not at the volume Golden Valley needs.
But they still have to regas. And as they grow out. I'm just asking a question. The transmission line serves a dual purpose for you. And my reasoning behind it is for long term investment, it's better. Short term, what you're doing makes sense, but long term, if a gas line comes down, you can now use that transmission line, and now you've got gas all the way up there with the transmission line, and it can go further east eventually down the Richardson Highway. But right now, you don't have that capability. I just bring this up as curiosity. I'm not in the gas business. I don't understand the modeling. I do understand consolidating and bringing costs down to make sure, you know, the residents, like you have folks you're trying to do, you know, has the best furniture price. And so I just asked that question about, is there a way to jointly use storage facilities with all the users in Fairbanks?
I'm sure it's possible. I wouldn't recommend it.
And why would you recommend it?
Because do you have all your storage facilities and you're all in one tank? Right? Now you have, and you lose that tank?
I'm not saying one tank. I'm saying one area. All the trucks or the rail comes into one area, it's there. You've got one LNG plant from somewhere. Right. So, I mean, you're not going to have one big tank. You're going to have maybe three or four tanks on tank farm, so to speak. But, again, it's still, it's got to be operated. And we're now just asking, is there a synergy? Is there a cost savings for all the residents? You have one storage. They're very expensive, as we've heard, to put in. Is it more cost effective to have a consortium, kind of like they do at the airport out here, where everybody owns the fuel tanks and all the different airlines use it, even though they compete with each other, but they understand the cost savings of having one tank farm and one system, hydrogen fueling system, to go to their individual airplanes. And so that's the concept.
I mean, I'm not an LNG tank designer, right? But when you size it, there's a certain blast radiuses and certain constraints that you have to have separation from a lot of stuff. And I think FNG right now is maxed out on that number right today on that site. And so I know Golden Valley's 2.2 million gallon tank maxes out the site that they have at North Pole. And so it's not like you just have a bigger tank. It's going to have all the area around it so you don't cause any damage if you have an explosion of some sort.
The other aspect of it is that I think what I understand your question is you're looking at, hey, can't you build transmission that would come up here? Can't you also, then you'd also have to build transmission that would come up here. And is that cheaper than trying to build transmission around the outer component of it? And have we looked at that from a mileage side of it? I would tell you that I have measured those distances, looked at those costs, and there wasn't a savings to be had. The other side that as we look at is we don't, in our load calculations, this Fort Wainwright in this area here, Fort Wainwright is not one of our users today. They've sent us a letter of interest that said we would like to have the opportunity to decentralize at some time in the future. We don't know when that would be, but we would be very interested to do that. That load almost matches the load that we are looking at trying to set up for that 3B load that we're ultimately trying to head for by 2027. In building in this way, when they come on, the only thing that we have to do, the only modifications that we have to do to be able to put them onto the system is to add an additional regulator station right here at Badger Road. And we're able to also supply that. So again, if we look at building a wagon wheel of ancillary transmission lines, That cost, it isn't going to be there isn't a dramatic cost savings. There isn't something that really jumps out and says, hey, put your storage at this location and build out your transmission.
Is the storage Golden Valley's or yours at North Pole?
We have to be determined.
If it's Golden Valley's, they could internally fund it?
They could.
Okay. But so that may be the economic benefit for IGU if they fund and build the storage tank that you use because they need it.
We would have to pay for that.
Yeah. Or they would want to come in. So that's more of the consortium idea, again, at North Pole. But again, on the distribution layout, we were trying to disclose distribution only. And then in year number four, we said, now we need transmission line. So that's why we're putting that link from North Pole to Wainwright. And then we said, okay, eventually we need to get to City Gate and the pipeline shows up. So it made sense just to go ahead and take it, maybe not around Bummer's Loop, but down right down to Johansson, right to the City Gate directly. And then F&G can tie into that transmission line over in the Steve Tyler, where they claim they're going to put a transmission line anyhow. So now you have high-pressure gas throughout the whole system all connected. It's a community solution, not just two utilities trying to do their own turf things. We don't care about turf things.
Yeah, that'll come to fruition for West End Fairbanks.
Right.
So that's kind of an outlier there. I mean, you're really...
Yes and no. That's where City Gate's going to be.
Yeah, no, but West Fairbanks, to me, west of the airport, I mean, you're right. For the volume there, you can come in all the way around, down to that, where you've got a Community Solution working together with FNG?
Well, the current pipelines that they've built and designed out don't have capacity beyond their service territory. So they've just engaged in doing some pipeline extensions in here. They don't have capacity to carry additional gas beyond that. You know, outside their service territory.
They have no transmission today. FNG doesn't. So they're running this is distribution only. And we looked at it and said, well, we could do that for a few years, but we're going to add it when we need it, just in time. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of been our approach.
So, can you talk about the big loop going around? The transmission line really starts here, is planned to go up to this point here, There's a touchscreen in it.
Yeah.
How do I get back? I want to touch it one. Okay, goes up here and goes to this point. And it goes up to this point, Fort Wayne area. Then it comes up to this point here, and this is where FNG's been talking about putting a transmission line anyhow to tie into their tank and everything else. So again, they have access to transmission. And then they said, well, if you come down, we put it along here, a little tougher route, which I think, if we can get across the railroad yard, with a big transmission pipe, I don't know if we've talked to them about that. It may not be a popular conversation. But if we can go down to Johansson and follow straight through here, you've arrived at City Gate. Now you have pressure regulation devices here, and you can serve this loop-fed system that radiates out from the transmission. So we think we've done a pretty good... Now, the other thing we could have done is we could have put larger pipes in the loops, the feeders out here. And in lieu of that, we said we're going to put dual regulators in. So if we lose a regulator station, then you have to supply from adjacent stations. So we're going to be putting in dual regulator stations at any one of these points. So if we have a failure of a regulator station, we can just switch over to the other one. So again, the engineer side of me is I want a really redundant system. I live in Fairbanks, and at 60 below, you have about 8 hours before your house starts to freeze up. And so we need to have a system that can really keep the lights on the whole town.
So for the system, what does it look like? So for phases 1, 2, and 3, it gives you a sense of how many miles of pipe. Again, the distribution feeders, 4, 6, and 8 inch diameter. The distribution mains themselves, just 2 inch HDPE pipes. And then in phases 4 through 6, that's when we need the transmission line at least partially built in 4. So we can feed that portion of phase 4 where it is, and then ultimately for phase 5 we need to have it over at the parks and Sheep Creek. But it gives you a sense, and then also the service line estimated number of miles. This hones in on mainly for phases 1, 2, and 3. Again, 2015, 16, and 17. With regards to that, again, the storage and regas being located here near the power plant. That first part of where we want to be able to, where we're planning to be able to kick this off. One of the things that we wanted to try to do was to have no transmission in those first three phases. So we went through a modeling process looking at this. It is a little challenging. You can see that we've got some areas here in orange. That means that we're getting very low. However, that being said, that's with 100% filled out. That is everyone connected to the system. I don't expect that we will have that scenario by the time this ultimately gets built out. But it does tell us that we have a system the way we would have it set up to be able to support these first three phases without having to have transmission in place.
On the coldest day
of the year. January 9th, 1979. This is that area within phase one. We've got two design teams working right now. We've got a design team putting together plans for phase one. That's design right away and permitting. We also have a different design team working on phase two. Phase one, of course, for this year. Some of the scenarios that we go through is just looking at where do we put our valves? What is the best way to situate valves? Should we have an outage? Who can we keep in gas? How do we have to take them off? Again, preliminary, but it just gives you a sense of how we then try to isolate this down into a smaller component. Phase one gives you a sense of how many miles of pipe that we're looking at for the feeders, 11 miles of 58 miles of 2-inch through the residential streets. Potential customers in the area for residential, about 2,000. Again, you know, looking at the study that was done by Cardinal in January, finished in January this year, 77% conversion is what we would anticipate for the residential users. You can see not a lot of folks, but every phase it builds up. That demand, and you can see what the demand for gas is in 2016, at least using that as our model to go on out, and then ultimately what it would mean when we anticipate full conversion for the volume of gas just for phase one. This is only phase one, but I just wanted to be able to have you be able to get a sense of what each one of these phases might look like, what that demand might look like.
Michael?
Mr. Chair, when you're, just to get a back of the envelope feel, what's your division between that 175.5 between residential and commercial? Is it 60-40? Is it 70-30? Is it 50-50?
You know, it'll vary a little bit. We don't have a lot of commercial in this area.
Yeah.
I would guess that we're going to be somewhere around 80+% residential.
Okay.
For this one, surprisingly, over one of the other phases, I saw that change, but I think it's over in phase five. But this particular area is predominantly residential. Yes.
Great.
You have cost estimates for what does this look like? We've relooked at taken a look at this, looked at kind of the modeling process with NSTAR, looking at the miles of pipe that we have. Trying to hone down on what that might be. Looking at the prices that NSTAR has seen, putting those cost estimates together, looking at what was done previously back in 2012 with Michael Baker Jr. And all in all, we've come together with a cost estimate that's around $230 million. Phases 1 through 3 at 80 and 4 through 6 at 153. And of course, you saw the miles of pipe and the number of services, so it gives you a sense of order of magnitude what that might look like. Included in that is, again, the service lines, excess flow valves, you know, things that would bring us all the way out to the meter at the house, as well as the 30% contingency is what's included in this estimate.
And what year do you plan on phase four? What year do you plan on
phase four? Phase four would have been in the fourth year, would have been in 2018. 15 in phase 1, 16, 17, and phase 4, it would be 2018.
So is each phase a year? Is that what you're doing?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I have a question. So what are you estimating per mile for a cost?
Well, it depends on what type of pipe you're putting in.
Any kind of an estimate?
I have it in detail, but I don't have it on this
okay.
on this slide. But I mean, you know, for two inch pipe, you know, we're somewhere around $26 a foot. Tariff rate for NSTAR in Anchorage is $22.59 a foot. We're about 15% higher than that for Fairbanks. As an example, less for the 2-inch. For the distribution feeders, obviously, more than that, I believe, for the transmission, it's $171 a foot for the steel transmission line. But I've got that, and
okay.
We have gone through that with Kirk Warren as well, just as we try to come together and be comfortable with what we're showing you.
Right. Thank you.
So what's coming next as we proceed forward? The phase one design is won't the design permitting and right of way won't be completed until January of this year. We're going to need to purchase the pipe or make put that pipe out for bid prior to that. The end of January is when it's going to be bid for construction. We won't have a contractor under contract for about 8 weeks, puts up till about the end of March. They'd only have a month before they'd have to have that much pipe available in Fairbanks. That's not realistic. And so we're looking to purchase that pipe in November to be able to put that out for bids in November so that we can make sure that it's on the ground in Fairbanks by the time we have that contractor in hand. Obviously, we want to let the construction contract the end of January. January 28th, I think, is what's in the contracts with our design teams. We intend to hire a gas operator for the system by December of this year. We're already into the RFP phase of that work. Obviously, there's been lots of discussion about storage that's going on. We know that we're going to need temporary storage. Should gas be coming in third quarter 2016, we're going to need something. What's that going to look like? We're ready to launch off and ready to be able to start that process in October of this year. Regulatory Commission requires us to have 5 days of storage within our system, but we'll be looking at temporary storage for both ourselves and Golden Valley through that process. The phase two design work right now is only funded through 65%. We'll be looking to complete that and finalize that. The application that we've got for the $8.1 million only took us into 65% design phase in phase two. And then we plan to, in 2015, begin that process for hiring someone to get on board for the design right-of-way permitting for phase three, basically trying to provide an 18-month window for that component's design right-of-way permitting so that we can then roll into the construction, again, looking out phase three being in year 2017.
So IGU does not plan to self-perform the operation of the system?
When we were formed, we were kind of given a message, and it said, we don't like big government. Not to be surprised in Fairbanks, but we don't like big government. So we said, okay, how can we respond to that? Not becoming the giant bureaucracy of utility company. So we decided at the time we would have probably 3 to 4 employees. There would be a general manager, probably a CFO equivalent, maybe a procurement person, and maybe admin type person. That's 4 people. And then we would contract out the operations.
Okay. Makes sense. I just didn't know. That's the first I saw it, so didn't know how it was being set up.
And that's it.
So my finance hat's on. When do you have positive cash flow with your...
that's a function... Well, okay. We'll talk about that. We need to talk about how much money is available with favorable terms to make that work. That's still a little bit in the air. You have access to sets money, and you could have really deferred type things. We have a model. We've shared our model with Nick. So there's a lot of moving parts in everybody's models, and I can't predict the date, but it's going to be a function of financing. Right now, we think, we believe we can get the first 3 phases built out, and then we're going to do the long-term trajectory to see what that looks like in the model.
Questions from the board? Well, thank you. I thought it was very enlightening. I appreciate you coming down and spending the time, and a lot of work has been done. Obviously, it's a lot of thought has gone into it, and that's just drawing a line on the map. There's a lot more to it.
It's nice having Steve back in this room for a few minutes.
Yeah. Gary decided he has a question.
Maybe Rick and Chris are going to cover this, but you folks have been talking about a consortium of Are you going to talk about that today?
Well, I can let them see for themselves first.
That discussion, Dana's kind of walking us down that path. I mean, you're talking about showing ownership and of trucking and storage, aren't you?
It's probably at multiple different levels.
The
answer is yes. In my mind, we're looking for a Fairbanks solution. Not one that maybe we can maximize this or that. So we need to keep focused on what's the best thing for Fairbanks and not try to feather bed your own nest. So the answer is, if we can do it as a group cheaper, then we should look at it. If all you're going to do is put three people with the same dollar figure and then reappropriate money and shit, that's really not, that's not doing it cheaper. That's just slicing the, something differently. So we're going to look at all that to make sure that we can have synergy when we come together and make it work better.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
MWH, right?
Yes. Chris?
All right. Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, I might need a determination given my passion for a certain Oriental restaurant in that distribution area, whether or not I need a conflict.
I'll be happy to review that for you.
Yeah, we should go and check it out.
Yes.
Just to be sure.
Yes.
Should I sit here so you can see the
board?
We've got a brief overview. I'm happy to be here, but I think also that Corey may be on the line if he didn't get called away, so I wanted to let everyone know he's there. Corey, you on the line?
Corey?
I am. I'm there. Can you hear me? I had to unmute my phone.
Yeah, okay. Maybe he left after I mentioned him financing the story.
He was checking his wallet.
Yeah.
If it's okay with the chair, we'll go ahead and get started. We have a presentation to give, a PowerPoint presentation, nonetheless, recognizing that there have been a lot of presentations today. We're going to try to hit it, the highlights. There's a lot that's been going on. I think, as the board knows, we now have a signed concession agreement. In addition to that, there has been a lot of work focusing on getting to
the conference,
OCTIC agreements negotiated, and so we'll dive into those items. To start, I think let's just if I've got the mouse here.
You
want me to do it, Chris?
I can drive.
Yeah, Rick will drive.
Okay.
So, in previous presentations, I think Board Member Wilkin asked that we lead with this graphic, and so we have done so. I have shortened up the timeline on it, or taken off some of the back end to make it simpler to follow, but we'll step through each of these items and hit the highlights, and then if there are questions, we certainly encourage you to ask. This is focused on the commercial agreements and all of those kinds of contracts and so forth. A lot of the other work that we're doing kind of comes out in this discussion, and then following this, we'll talk a little bit about some of the other things that don't fall into it so easily, like the pad and so forth. But again, the concession agreement was signed on September 19th. Along with that, we have been negotiating both the gas supply agreement, changes to the gas supply agreement that align it with the project. We have a meeting on, I think it's October 13th.
October 13th is scheduled to work with BP on refining the gas supply agreement to help it align with the terms of the concession agreement. And I know that Ada is involved in some other.
has left the conference.
And this is where I might toss it to Corey to see if he has anything to add to that.
Well, yeah, I just, if you can hear me okay, you know, I kind of tell the board there that the utilities have been working, I think, very well together. We've been having meetings on a regular basis and working on terms of the offtake. So, I see really a point here where the Fairbanks community, the utilities, and everybody else is kind of really aligned. Everyone's moving in the same direction behind MWH in this project. So I'm very encouraged by that, and I think that really is going to lead to much greater opportunity or success in the project. We are in communication with BP, and I've talked to them about the need to change the contract some to meet some of the needs of the investor. BP is cooperative and wanting to help as well. We also understand that from Ada's staff that Ada is moving full steam ahead of getting their own gas contract, and why we understand you can do that and engage in that effort. I certainly want to extend one more time that Golden Valley has fully offered its contract with BP to be used for this project. So anyway, I'm very encouraged by the progress. I've always been someone to kind of tell you that not only deliver good news, but and we do have hurdles, and there are some significant hurdles, but I see progress, and I see willingness of the utilities to kind of flex and bend a little bit to make this project work. So that's kind of what I'd add. There's a lot of work going into this from the utility standpoint.
Thanks, Corey. But in terms of the gas supply agreement, like I said, October 13th, meeting with BP to, they're working with their chains of command internally, and we've given them our wish list, so they're going to be coming back with us, and we'll have a draft in that day to hopefully finalize that. The JDA is an agreement between MWH Golden Valley and the investor to form the special purpose company that will be capitalized to execute the project, and that negotiation is proceeding too. All this was triggered, of course, by the signing of the concession agreement to start moving all of these into the next phase.
Are you talking about the LNG plant?
Yes.
So, and who are you negotiating with?
The joint venture, the special purpose company, is going to be a joint venture of MWH, Golden Valley, and the investor.
Northley?
Yes.
Okay.
And so we're negotiating now to put that together, and that'll be the special purpose company that gets capitalized by the ADA capital, by the investor capital, and by the commercial debt, and will be responsible, and will hold the concession agreement with the state, and will be responsible for executing the project and delivering the LNG. So that, too, was triggered to move to the next phase by the signing of the concession agreement, so those negotiations are underway. There's a lot going on right now, trying to meet this really accelerated schedule, as we've talked about in the past.
Mr. Chair, if I can make a comment that might be borderline inappropriate. I appreciate people putting the schedule up front. We all have read some things recently with veiled references to something other than the project driving the schedule. And we've just talked about a few things that are coming up. This has been in front of the board for quite a long time, and it's on pace. It's slower than some of us might have liked, but these dates are coming up, and I just appreciate the calendar being out in front again.
Okay.
Yes, moving on, if there are no other questions, looking at operator selection, we went through a bid period. We have selected an operator, and we are in the award process. That process includes bringing the apparent successful operator into having them meet with the designers, looking at the plant. There have been some changes to the plant since the RFP went out in terms of the design, so those things have to be incorporated into their estimates, and they're also going to look at it from a plant operability perspective. That's going on right now down in Kansas. I think it is October 31st, there will be a contract estimate will be completed, which will, in parallel with that, there's the operations contract negotiation that's been going on for some time. There's reviews and stuff by ADA and MWH that the operator has seen it, but that will be the cost will roll into that, and that will be finalized in early December is what we're anticipating. But the
can you tell us in public who the operator is?
At this point, because we are still in that selected but not award phase.
I think you said they just were selected. You just haven't awarded it.
Correct. Exactly. There has been no operations contract signed, and so from that perspective, it's a certainly in a public forum, we prefer to keep it confidential. ADA is very been involved in a part of this process, and I think staff are certainly aware of where we're at. Shed light on that.
Well, I was going to say that we could discuss that in our executive session.
Well, I'm just curious, state procurement, either you're the parent, the way it works is you're the parent, whether you're the low or the parent selectee, that's public knowledge. Whether or not you get to a contract is another story. There's a lot of things that have to happen. And I'm just curious in this forum, in our deal, we're making sure the public, we're doing the right thing for the public,
right.
and whether they should know or not, I don't have the experience, but generally speaking, once someone's been selected, that's what we'll release to the public. It's whether or not they get to the finish line, that's a different story with the contract, the terms and conditions. It's no different than we selected MWA. And it took a while to get to the concession agreement.
Understood.
I just want to make sure that we're going on the right path as far as what the public's right to know.
I think we defer that to you. I mean, we're just trying to do the right thing, so if we should reveal it in this forum, we can do that.
Well, that's, under state procurement, this isn't the operator isn't part of the state procurement that like we would do for other projects.
Yep.
This was contracted out to
Northern Lights Energy.
Northern Lights Energy to do the procurement and select the operator with ADA giving permission when the contract's done. We've looked at the contract, and before they make a final choice, ADA will have their point in time to say yes or no to that operator. But that information will be given out. It's, right now, it's in MWH's thing on a public forum.
Yeah, certainly.
I'm going to circle back around and ask you a bit. ADA is guaranteed some of these costs. MWH is encouraged selecting an operator.
Yes.
Okay. That's public money.
Right, but it is still not under a... We understand, Chair, and the information will be public before operator is selected. It's the point in time when that
happens.
They've
been selected.
Well, they haven't completed the process.
Quote, you've selected the operator, you just have not got a contract with them. Is that correct?
That's correct. Certainly we're... absolutely interested and unequivocally committed to observing the law, and if there is if we're wrong on this, certainly we're going to write that. Our understanding.
I don't know.
Take ground.
I asked this question because I don't know what the.
Sure. Our sense is that we're okay, and the process we're going through is kind of in the best interest of the project and the parties, and certainly if that's if there are questions about that.
Mr. Chairman, if it's a question of whether the law requires disclosure at this point, I don't believe it does. I think that there's still a commercial proprietary interest that MWH has in that information until they get further into the negotiations of the contract.
So selecting someone doesn't fall into that? That's the part. When you say you select someone, that's a finite deal.
Yeah.
You are the apparent apparent winner.
I understand. I understand. But the selecting somebody and then negotiating to get to a contract, there's a gap in between. And if there is a business proprietary interest in keeping that confidential until you get to that next step of actually negotiating a contract, that is something that can be honored here. There's not an obligation to disclose at any particular time in that process of contracting. And I'm relying upon MWH's statements that they treat that information at this point as business proprietary information.
Okay. In interest, Mr. Chair, that's also consistent with the terms of concession.
Yeah, one of our interests here is that we're trying to preserve our ability to have commercial leverage in the deal, so and drive
the, you know, your best bargain.
Keep it.
So, Mr. Chair, maybe the better way to say it then is that you're in closing stages with an operator.
Yes, I think that's a very fair statement. I yield to the wise counsel of Mr. Clausen.
There's an apparent selectee until further terms and conditions are negotiated.
And I think that's the concise term, Chair. It's an apparent. It's not a final selected operator at this point in time.
Okay. Are there, does anybody have any other questions before I move on?
It's your time.
Move on to the next section or move on to the next slide?
Move on to the next, the EPC contract.
Perfect. Okay.
So, right now, there is a team in Lenexa with that includes Hewitt, eight representatives are there, MWH, we have the apparent operator, we are engaging a third party cost estimating firm to look at, to follow and validate the process as well. They are pretty close to a design freeze, which is an important step when getting to the cost estimate and the schedule that would be used to base a contract upon. That estimate and that schedule are anticipated November 4th, and after a validation process should be released on November 7th. Those cost and schedule will help inform not only the EPC contract negotiation itself, but also the off-take agreements.
And Chris, could I just jump in? Sure. Also for the board, ADA does have two engineers embedded in this process down in Kansas through the whole process.
Yeah, Alan Shepard from MEI and I.
So, Chris, did some dates just change? We moved our October meeting from the end of October to November 6th with the anticipation that the EPC would be available the third week in October or fourth week in October. So we were going to wait to have those numbers before we met. So have we moved the date? Question one. Question two, should we now move our meeting date again?
Meeting date being the board?
November 6th.
Yeah, so yes. Yes,
we should move it?
To the first question, yes. Dates for completions of agreements have changed. In the interest of openness, we put dates out there and work very hard to meet them, because that's the way the deal comes together. Yeah. There's a lot of deal making involved. There's a lot of parties that are not constrained by some of the constraints we have, and so have to be brought along. And as the parties that have to participate become ripe for a decision. The decision is made, but we work very hard to set schedule goals out there and work hard toward them. So they do move, certainly, and they move in response to particularly big events or big breakthroughs. And so the concession agreement signing is one of them. There's a whole update cycle of the schedule we just went through based on that to reflect the terms, the final terms of the concession agreement. There have been significant, I'll probably ask Corey perhaps to talk a little bit about this, but there are, we are in discussions with utilities, and there are some concepts at play that appear reasonable for us to proceed around trucking, storage, and offtake agreements, among other things that we're going through. And as these develop, things change. And so the schedule will respond to those. And that's, I want to be very upfront about that. Our goal that we're working very hard towards is to close by the end of the year.
And my question isn't to mean the effort that's the,
oh, I understand.
Logistic item, because we moved because some of us were concerned we were going to meet in October and have nothing to talk about, but a week later we'd have a lot to talk about.
Yep.
So now it looks like that slid out, and so perhaps, Dana, we'd talk about moving that meeting again, but you guys coordinate that. But
right, certainly.
But in that, that's a big event when the cost of that plant drops on the table. Then a whole bunch of other things start to cascade, and we don't really can't do much until we know that big number.
Okay.
So you guys do have that.
It's the first I've seen it. So.
And that's new information that we're just getting to. So as we get that tied down.
Yeah, and like I said, we right after the 19th, the concession agreement was signed. We were up in Fairbanks earlier this week working with utilities and simultaneously going through a big, you know, pretty comprehensive schedule update. This reflects that. Rick is pinging me that the specific question about the timing of the cost estimate, November 4th, it's the delivery date. There's a validation process that we have scheduled until November 7th. And
so we will have the cost estimate for the plant on November 8th.
No, he said November, he said November 7th.
Yeah. Well, he's going to have a number. He's going to do it. He's going to do a 3-day review, but there'll be a number to do it.
November 4th.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be, ADA is going to be part of that review process and so forth. So, I mean, it'll be out there. It'll be visible. But the validation process, I think, is pretty important. And so it effectively finalizes the number. So, we accept this.
So, is it correct that the original November 4th date hasn't moved, that the cost is going to be here that day? You're just talking about a validation process. It goes on for 3 days until Friday, but that may not affect their board meeting schedule.
Yeah.
So looking at your schedule, what I'm concerned about, obviously, is being able to, as a board, to be able to react fast enough, you know, because this is all timeline, right? And we're all have our schedule, and we're all busy, and we can't pivot, you know, on a week's notice and whatnot. And the other thing you have there, the last typically 10 days, which I've scheduled out already, is Thanksgiving holiday week, which people do things, go places and whatnot. And to me, it looks like right after that week, you've got contract executed for EPC the first couple days of December, which, and our next meeting is what, December 4th?
6th.
So either we better plan on a couple days in this, on that meeting, or a whole long day. We got an AEA meeting, my friend, mm-hmm. Russell, that same time. That's first up. But it looks to me like there's a lot backing up on that December. So the more we can get through in November, the better we're going to be for the BURAC in December. I do not, we talk about this subsequent after this meeting about trying to get people together between the 15th of November and the 4th of December. I think that's problematic.
Yeah, I fully acknowledge the challenges. Yeah, we are going to drive to meet this.
As a board, we want to be, we're on it. We want to be there. We want to move forward. But there's only so much we can do.
Understood. And you know, this is Ted's right. This is the first time. Well, I think probably this morning was the first time it got sent over. But apologies to Sherry. But scheduling and so forth is something that we coordinate very closely with data staff. So.
Okay.
Let's cover the off. While we're in that section, what happened to trucking?
Oh,
we used to have a trucking line up there.
Yeah, and it actually appeared in a different schedule than the commercial agreement schedule, but we'll talk about it here in a minute. I don't actually have it in a schedule, but I have news and description there. So. Anyway, we're kind of at the offtake agreement, so I'm going to let Rick.
Yes, as a quick update on that, of course, we put term sheets out a couple of months ago. But since then, we've really been trying to engage the community, utilities in particular, to work cooperatively, find common solutions, et cetera. And we think a lot of progress is being made on that front. We had a meeting just 2 days ago. Nick was there. We had Dan Britton, Corey, Bob, and Steve. And we were there from, 9 to 5, working together on collective solutions. And we set up the next meeting date for October 8th. So I guess what I see on that front is that the utilities understand the challenge, and they're rising to the occasion, and they're cooperating and talking. I don't want to put words in their mouth beyond that, and Corey may want to add a little bit to this, but I think we're heading towards a solution that, as a collective group, will be workable for the project.
Hmm. That's great news.
It is.
I appreciate everybody working towards that end.
Yeah, exactly. It's
both the utilities, the NWH, everybody, and Corey.
Yeah, and I'll sing for Dan. He has been extremely constructive in these meetings. He's been invaluable because, as you know, he brings a lot of knowledge to this project, and he's sharing that with us very selflessly.
Mr. Chairman, Corey, if I could add just a little bit.
Sure. Go ahead, Corey.
The trucking, we have been working on, and we're talking about the form of the entity that it would take, and MPVH is providing assistance with that. We believe there's been discussion that there's maybe $10 million from ADA if we put together a trucking consortium entity that would involve the three utilities. And we are working towards that, forming what the entity would look like. So we're putting some of the nuts and bolts together along with all the modeling that's been done. We got, fairly comfortable. I'm going to have to convince my board that we have the trucking component that's fairly well nailed down in order for them to sign a concession agreement, an offtake agreement to buy gas that's going to be located up on the north slope. So we are working on that, and in particular, I'm putting a significant amount of effort in it, and we are getting a lot of cooperation and interest from both FNG and IGU.
Thank you, Corey. All of this, of course, drives towards financial closing, and because of time lags for capital calls in order to meet our December 31st deadline, we've got to close on the schedule for mid-December.
On the, Mr. Chair,
Michael.
It says final agreements for utility board action. If the boards of the utilities haven't acted on those agreements, can we achieve a financial close? I'm kind of looking to Ted for it. Can that happen?
A final financial close, we need executed offtake agreements or the concession agreements.
Sort of.
Right, exactly.
Well,
so
we also need an EPC. There's two, so that's why a timeline is moving forward in a series of agreements.
I'm just looking at the final agreements going to the utility boards for utility board action. Those are
they need some time to look at it, I would assume. I mean, they're not going to get it today and approve it or do whatever that afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is the requirement for that? I mean, maybe Corey or you guys can tell us how long do they need to have it in hand to be able to you know.
Yeah, I'll let Corey speak for his board. We discussed that specifically at our meeting on Tuesday. And for Dan, it's a quick process. But we're working with IGU and Golden Valley to make sure we get those agreements in place soon enough for their boards to act.
But where I was going with that, Mr. Chair, is I thought I just heard you say something about capital calls in the calendar of the investment.
Yes.
I'm trying to make sure I understand what that means.
It takes, once they've got an investment committee approval to make the investment, then they make the call on capital. And it's, I'd have to let North Bay speak to this, but I think it's about a 5-day business day process that they need to get money transferred from bank accounts.
We're
giving it a 10-day buffer since it's Christmas.
I just wanted to make sure it wasn't a quarter by quarter or semi-annual or some.
I'm pretty sure it's 5 business days.
Okay, that's
a good question.
And the utilities have governance processes that have to be, cannot be overlooked, and I think part of the process that's very important there is that the boards be brought along. They know what's happening as time goes on, right? They understand the development of the project. They understand the concepts that are being considered for how the deal will be structured and so forth. And so the intent is not to hit them cold with something they haven't seen before. Boom, they got to digest it. There's a process of bringing them along that includes board presentations, which we have in the case of Golden Valley. We have one in October, on October 8th, for example. All of that is designed to help, you run these processes in parallel. So people are kind of up to speed as you go, and then when the time comes, they're familiar and frankly comfortable, because we wouldn't have gotten that far if they weren't. So that's a very important part of managing a super tight schedule.
Okay,
so could we go back to the schedule, please?
Sure.
So the EPC contract is November 4th, and then it appears to be 2 weeks later, maybe a week later, you're going to finalize the offtake agreements. How can that happen in 7 days if we don't know the costs of the plant, which then affects the cost of everything in the system? And I guess I'm going back to May, when we started talking about a source and application of funds. We have, in my mind, we have 5 different sources of funds to fund this thing. And how we apply those monies affects the far right box on your model, which, by the way, I saw yesterday up in Fairbanks with Amy and IGU and Nick. So how we spin that wheel in that model affects that box on the right side. So don't we have to have IGU, GVA, FNG, all in a room with MWH and us and saying, yeah, that's the cocktail we like. That's the cocktail we're brewing out to fund this thing. Because GVA has its own interests, IGU has its interests, and FNG has their interests. And they're not particularly aligned. And there's some tension in that funding cocktail that needs to get sorted out. So I don't see in there where we're going to sort that out. And I suspect that sorting, those decisions will be made by this board, because there are some public policy calls in those decisions. So I go back, is there contemplated somewhere this source and application, this meeting on how we're going to balance these 5 funding sources spread across this $400 million project to try to satisfy the needs of 3 distinct groups that, while they're working together, have in some respects some very divergent interests. When or if are we going to do that?
It's going on right now.
But you're absolutely right. And there's
interests. But I never get into the meeting.
That's what makes this such an, I'll put it in quotes, interesting project, right? And trying to run all these processes in parallel and get to that answer, really quickly because we're really driving towards a very accelerated schedule. But without going into where they are right now in terms of the joint meetings they're holding, a lot of that issue is being discussed about different economic interests, how those are going to be, you know, cooperatively worked around so that as a community we can get this project off the ground and it'll work for everybody involved. And so that's what Chris means by it's coming together and being talked about now, but Ada is part of those discussions, and Nick was in all those meetings, and you're welcome to come too. And we're working towards it. And so it's not going to be something we have to start right there at that point in time. We're working towards it right now.
Well, let me just give you an example. Yesterday, and I was invited to the meeting, so I just shut up because I was just a Klingon, because it was really Nick and IGU and MWH. So, but let me just deal in the absurd for the moment. I don't think we ought to put $100 million in CIS money. I think we ought to make that zero. And we ought to shove that money down the system to help with distribution. What does that do to the far right number? Somewhere along the line, another example in the absurd, somewhere along the line, someone made the decision that we were going to cap the equity contribution from the investor of $75 million, plus or minus. What would it mean if we put $175 million into the system? What does it do to that meter price on the end? Those are the kind of questions that I think need to be asked. And somewhere along the line, I hope that we can see what it does to the meter price. Maybe those are really crazy ideas, but maybe you're splitting the baby with some of these to balance across the system so that we're able to build out as much as we can build out. Because we've learned that demand, first, and secondly, OPEX on the plant are the two drivers of this thing.
So Gary, I'll make a comment on that. And I think you're spot on as far as what it does, how you squeeze the tube and what comes out. But it all starts with the feed cost.
That's right.
And so once we get the feed cost down, Pat, then I think it will roll, and then you have the ability to start to play, because that feed, you got to have that feed. And it may make a big determination on where are the options of funding come from downstream based on the feed cost.
Could we go
so
back?
I'm really like to get that feed cost nailed down. That's my personal opinion.
Absolutely right. And we'll get to this in a minute, but I just want to let you know we're going to be discussing this tornado diagram that'll give you a lot of the, you know, answers, you know, based on certain input assumptions. But you saw the model, so yeah.
So could we go back to the schedule?
Yeah.
So that goes back to my original question. We're going to know the cost of that plant on November 4th, and then it's being suggested that the utility meetings, negotiations, and the offtake agreements are finalized on the second week of November, so call it a week later. That just doesn't...
Scary, I agree.
But, well, it may be scary, but it's, whatever the word is, it's not realistic.
It's left the conference.
Yeah, you know,
well, at the very minimum, it puts the pressure on everybody to come to the solution.
Exactly. And, you know, on the one hand, it's an extremely aggressive schedule. We noted that three meetings back, but we're all trying to drive towards it, so we're doing a lot of things in parallel that normally would be done in sequence. But it does put a lot of pressure on people to come to a decision. You're absolutely right. And so it's a blessing and a curse.
And when in that schedule do we sit and have our meeting about the funding cocktail? The source maps of the five fund sources and how we apply it and the effect of that on the meter price.
I think you'll have the commercial deal, which is going to include how these utilities cooperate on the offtakes, among other things. You'll have that driven by the schedule. So it means so at that point, you'll know what the trade-offs you're talking about, what real impact they'll have. It's, at that point, it's all math. So right now, it's scenarios.
So is it a crazy idea to think that we're going to have those three folks and you at a table, and everybody goes, yeah, okay, that's the cocktail we like right there. All three of them are each going to give a little and take a little. Is that where we're headed?
It's all about stakeholders and everybody's competing interests being met. And we left out the investor and the lender, too. But, yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, that's what these forums that we've been facilitating with the three utilities are all about right now, because you can carve out a certain set of these commercial agreements that require just them, plus ADA, and ADA's there, to come to some conclusion. But there will be an expanding circle of stakeholders as we get closer to the end of the project, and absolutely. Or that will have to happen.
Chairman,
thank you.
This is Corey. Could I make the observation here?
Yeah, go ahead, Corey.
Okay, thanks. You know, Gary, your observation on the schedule is right on. And the board, my board needs time. This is a big deal, and they're going to need time to think about it. I'm bringing them along. We have a meeting scheduled, like Rick's already told you, on the 8th of my board and SWH to understand what the potential cocktail is going to look like. My observation is that cocktail can get cooked right now. We can model what differences in the cost that come in from Kiewit and everything else like that. How are we divvy up the IEP monies that the governor allocated, unless to ADA's discretion? There's no reason to wait for that process. And I think in our meeting that we had, I felt like the meeting we had on Wednesday, we really kind of divvied up that cocktail. And also kind of created this, what we call the buyer's club, for how the utilities would go ahead and buy gas and how the benefits of the capacity increases and the price goes down, how that would be allocated. So we've made, I think, big strides in understanding who's going to take what risk and who's going to have to pay more at what point. And that can't wait for the price to come in from Kiewit. That's got to get done now, and that cocktail's got to get cooked. And if we can't come to an agreement on that, then this project's got a really serious problem. So I was encouraged by the progress this week that three utilities made when they sat down, and I think we kind of are getting an understanding of how this is going to get done. So I hate to kind of make that comment and then have to leave, but I'm late for a meeting that started at 1:30, so I'm going to have to sign off. But I'll hold on for a few more minutes to see if there's any follow-up questions to my comments.
Thank you, Corey.
I think you're good, Corey. Thank you.
Thank
you,
Corey.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, everyone.
We didn't want to get out in front of them, but I'm glad Corey elaborated a bit there.
This left the conference.
Are we ready for the next slide?
Just two more.
Okay. Good bunch of two.
Can't resist it.
So if I can continue and no more questions, we didn't show them in the schedule because of reasons I'll explain, but there are several things that are also continuing. The procurement of long-lead equipment is also a process that Hugh is going through that we anticipate, and I think the board is aware of this, we anticipate that process will conclude after financial close, which means the money to put down on equipment will be after close, and it's not something that the board has to contemplate after.
But Chris, RFP's going out within a couple days.
Yeah, they're in the final stages of finalizing the RFPs that go out. They've already received some bids back on equipment. That process is going along well. The market is responding in an improving way, I guess I'll say, the vendor market. It's part of this period where they go out for bid and they review them. There's a process where they can use the time period to get commercial leverage with vendors, and they want to preserve that opportunity, not put pick which particular bid too quickly. And there are also options for optimizing schedule and cost in there that come to play. So there's a procurement process that helps keep costs down and drive a successful schedule as well. So they're in the middle of that now. And it's also a process that the AS staff are very closely tuned into. I think, as everybody knows, the pad is not completed. Didn't want to bother with the schedule on that. Lastly, we wanted to talk a little bit about trucking and storage, and that topic kind of came up already as we were going along. As you recall, the work that we've done on looking at how to best integrate the supply chain of gas down to Fairbanks and then into the distribution, as a result of that process, the idea was is that the technical information would be available so that an unidentified or undefined party or parties could pick that up and carry it forward in the best way possible. That has happened, is happening, I guess I should say. The utilities are, I think IGU mentioned that they are working with Golden Valley over how to deal with their storage needs short term, and then with the understanding that the long term is going to have to be dealt with as well. I won't revisit that. I think it was discussed pretty well. And then I think Corey mentioned the trucking side. They are looking at the utilities themselves are looking at how to cooperate on trucking in a way that brings the best value to all the players. There has been progress on that as well. And one of the questions that we've been asking are, what do the different parties need in order to achieve financial close around trucking and storage? It seems, and this is a little bit preliminary because we're still firming this up exactly, but it seems that the off-takers are getting more and more comfortable with what trucking and storage are going to look like. And so their requirements to sign take-or-pay agreements seem to be going down. They don't have to have signed contracts. They, a business planning or description of the process going forward seems to be sufficient. And so a survey of the parties that are going to participate in financial close indicates that, as a group, that it seems to be coming along pretty well. There's growing confidence in how that's going to work. And that's really good news, frankly, because we have plenty to do between now and the year. Anyway.
So just take trucking. Could we just go ahead to the tornado diagram?
Sure. And if I just may say, you last meeting you asked for an update, and so here it is.
And you added a few things?
We did.
Yeah. So just so I understand this, so springboarding off what you said for trucking, I read this and I say people are getting more comfortable with trucking because the range of whatever that number is could decrease by 7% or it could increase by 7%. Is that what this tornado thing tells me?
I can walk you through the tornado diagram.
Yeah.
And then I think part of what Chris is talking about is the certainty around the trucking costs is becoming... people are getting their arms around it, so they're less scared of the uncertainty there. The number of components, but okay. So this typical tornado diagram, we sort of listed, the key components of the supply chain, and the impact that they'll have on the final cost of gas to the FOB Fairbanks. That's on the upper Y or upper X axis up there. That's the decrease or increase in cost FOB Fairbanks. If it's blue, represents a negative change in the parameter, and if it's red, it's a positive change in the parameter. And so if you change the parameter positively and the gas price goes down, the demand, that makes sense because you're getting more demand, therefore the gas price is spread over more units, so it goes down. And so you'll see red and blue on each side of that as you go down. Trucking costs, So, and this is the way I divide this, sort of the stack here, too. It works out pretty well. LNG demand goes without saying. Then you can look at trucking and raw gas. Now, those are two costs that sort of pass straight through almost dollar for dollar. The reason that trucking costs have a more of an impact on the final gas price is because we're talking about, I don't know, $5 versus $3, whatever the numbers are. So it's a bigger number. Then you go down to EPC and ops, and you can see the impact they have based on whether EPC costs or operations costs come in higher or lower, and you can group them together. And then lastly, you've got the capital stack, and you've got the ADA money and the private money that's coming in, and you see if you pull out $5 million, let's say, of grant money, you'll get a negative parameter change in the final cost of gas, but it's not that significant because you're talking $5 million spread over a lot of money. So that's pretty much... I wouldn't take this as gospel, as exactly to the decimal point how it'll be impacted, but I think relatively speaking, this will be pretty consistent across pretty much all the scenarios that we're looking at.
Mr. Chair.
Michael?
On that capital stack, I was wondering about that, because if you move the private equity amount, you're backfilling it with something. Are you? Oh, so everything, so if I move sets, it's being backfilled with commercial debt.
Typically in our modeling, when we need to backfill anything, okay, we backfill with commercial debt.
Okay.
And just for the concession
being allowed. Yeah, no, I just was wondering if you would actually, to get the order of magnitude, if you were backfilling with private equity, you'd have to add the two.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I was worried you were understating what the impact of the capital stack was by breaking it out in components, but if you're backfilling the commercial debt, it's all equal. So that's consistent.
And so if I may, the we've talked about demand and operations costs as being drivers, and certainly the demand shows that, and I think that's intuitively, as demand goes up, costs go down, and it is a big, big driver. And
which is what the utilities are focusing on, managing that.
The demand is based on price.
Correctly. And the trucking costs and raw gas costs, as Rick mentioned, those are dollar for dollar changes. So if trucking goes up a dollar, it impacts every molecule of gas, and so it impacts the gas. Right. Excuse me. Trucking is a bigger band because it's a bigger number. Excuse me.
So, I'll pick it up.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, right.
Okay, you can't
hardly
talk to you.
Yeah. It's just, I'm so proud of it.
The quote of the day.
The point I wanted to make, though, is that we had talked about operations costs as being a big impact, and this apparently shows that that's not the case, but that what's hidden here is that this is on a percentage basis, but if you swing operations costs by $1 million, that has a much greater effect than $1 million in capex, and that's so that's one of the $20 million chunks that you can take out. It's a much bigger number. If you're taking that size of a drop in capex is getting harder and harder to do. We're still working very hard on optimizing OPEX, and that's part of the process we're in, and so that's a real opportunity to help drive costs down. And so that it was out of that discussion about how sensitive relatively few dollars are in operations to the price of gas. That's the point about operations costs and why we're very keen on keeping the plant operational costs down, as it's designed, and kind of focusing on that. So. But anyway, you had expressed interest in an update, so we wanted to provide it. So
back to trucking. When I read that, now it says to me, after you explained it to me, if we took... yesterday, it looked like the trucking cost was $4.70. Is that right?
It was in that range.
Somewhere in there. So if we... what that chart tells me that if we took 20% out of that $4.70, it would lower the cost of gas FOB Fairbanks by 7%.
Correct.
Is that what that says?
Exactly.
Okay. and back to Crookington. So, Chris, you said they're getting comfortable with numbers. How comfortable are you? Where are we around that 470? We don't want upside surprises, so I assume it's on the upper end on trucking.
Of course, I'd love to give you a very direct answer. It depends on your assumptions. If you assume aid of grant money, aid of contribution, if you, I'll give you another assumption. We have a price for trailers in there that some who are in the business think is conservative. Is it conservative? For the person who does this and thinks it's conservative, he's pretty comfortable. Those of us who worry about these things, you know, we're more middle of the road. The off-takers, I think, are getting, you know, and they each may be different, but are getting more comfortable with costs, I think, as a general statement, that's true. And then, but I think what's part of that, though, is that they see how to get there. They see the solution. How's trucking going to work? They see the vision. There is a reasonable vision for how it's going to come together, what the timelines associated with it would be. And so it's not this big, mysterious, scary thing that it once was, I guess. It's not just comfort with greater comfort with the number. It's greater comfort with the overall solution.
You all know the three utility CEOs quite well. And you can imagine if the three of them are sitting around a table for an entire day working constructively together, they build a lot of confidence amongst themselves. And that's the process that we're seeing happen right now, because they all bring a lot of different experience and insights to the table.
Well, I mean, it's no secret that I've always thought that the trucking component was the grenade. You know, and it was just going to blow up on our face and hurt us, hurt this project. And so I'm still skeptical of it, but I really believe that you folks are working it hard. And it'll be groundproof. It'll be groundproof when Carlisle or Northwest, the other company, bids on it, I guess. But when is that going to happen?
It's a good question. It is not seen as a precedent to closing. And it will be, the thought right now is that there is some trailer design testing and prototyping that needs to occur. It is involved in that. There is, I think, a desire for, right now, the Plan A tends to be favoring ownership of trailers, and that those things like that have to be concerned. And then so once you get to kind of how this is, you know, firming up of how that's going to come together, and you would know what to put out in a request for a bid from a trucking company, that's when that'll happen. And it's not going to be before closing. I'm pretty comfortable in saying that. There's approximately a one-year lead time on trailer orders. There's some prototyping that has to occur before that happens. But bringing a contractor on doesn't take a lot of time in those timelines. So it's out in the future a little bit, I would say.
So the trucking component in this plan is what amounts to it. They're going to have to take a leap of faith that it's going to come in at 470 or whatever it is. Nobody's going to know what that actual cost is going to be.
That is a fair statement. That is a fair statement.
I'm completely opposite. I have great faith in the trucking cost.
I'm glad you do.
I've been around it for 40 years, I know.
I started to ask the question.
the good news...
The winner will buy lunch. How's that?
the good news is that we've been coached and cautioned about not getting too far ahead of the parties, and I think that that's important. But... you know, there are people involved in these discussions, and presumably they'll continue to be. That is our hope and intent, that do this.
Thank you.
Chair, can I just...
Crystal?
Just to recap then, Chris, what we're seeing here is that we're going to know the cost for the operator, we're going to know the cost for EPC, and we're going to have no takeoff agreement. And then that's when closing... I mean, that's what the schedule says. Cost, uncertain about who's going to play. I mean, that's how I kind of see the schedule.
Before closing?
Right, but the contract executed for the EPC contract is going to happen before the offtake agreements are signed.
Yes. Well, the final EPC contract...
Is that executed before then?
We'll have to know the cost.
Well, I would
EPC,
think so.
Yeah, but what's the schedule for the EPC contract?
The validated cost will roll into it like November 11th, I think that's the date. And then that also informs offtake agreements. And then there's time between costs. When costs come in and the schedule is known, there's a negotiating period there that's actually pretty long. It goes into, I think, it's into December, goes into December 2nd. There's actually quite a bit of time there, especially because that EPC contract will have been reviewed and discussed, and a bunch of different aspects of it will already be negotiated, and then the prices will drop in, and then it'll get finalized. But it's not like we start talking about a contract when all the pieces are assembled. We start them in parallel. In fact, that the EPC contract is being reviewed by the parties right now. The operations contract review occurred in the past, and I think everybody has seen it, and nobody really has any big issues with it. It's mostly around the scope of work, getting that nailed down. So it is well along the path.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Got a little blood up there.
Good chair.
Next item. Number D. Michael?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion. I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss confidential information related to the Interior Energy Project and or Resources Energy Incorporated.
Any objections? Are we, Tiff, we'll go into executive session. Are we going back there?
After
a break. Yeah.